What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're so excited to have you back again for another week of Chicago Film Talk. Connor, how are you doing this week?
Doing great. I woke up at 8 this morning for absolutely no reason and watched a quick movie and had a leftover pair of crepes. And other than that...
Movie and crepes.
Yeah, and now I'm here. It's good.
So wait, what movie did you watch?
I watched the very end of Ace Ventura 2, Nature Calls.
So had you already started watching
it? I started it last night and just couldn't do it.
And fell asleep and then watched the very end of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite one.
It is
out of the two of them.
I want to say that it holds up, but it's also, I was just doing a little research on it while I was having my coffee, and it's in a list of like one of the most racist movies ever made.
You know what? You're not wrong there.
No.
Looking
and the first
back
one
on
is
it.
really like transphobic,
sure,
and everything as well. So it's hard, you know, in this day and age.
Let's bury that movie, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I still like it. I want to cling to the positivity of it that I, you know, the positive affiliations I have with it, but
oh, well. Well, we can help you work through that.
Thank you.
At a later time.
That's why I'm glad we're here.
One of the reasons that we're here, Ace Ventura Talk. The other reason we're here to talk Chicago cinema, we've got a great few guests here. Another full house, just like last week. I really like this. I like this panel sort of thing. I like having a lot of guests in the house. First off, we've got Thomas Motier. Say hello, Thomas.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
I love it. I like you've got a very good radio voice.
Nice. I try. I was born this way.
Yeah?
You know? Yeah.
Kid of the child of the airwaves.
It worked.
Mike Rempert as well.
Hello, everyone.
And these two are both filmmakers. They work together, and they've got an upcoming screening at Cinema Obscura's TV Party, number 12 to be exact, and that's going to be at the Logan Bar on December 20th of this year. Not
that's
of
correct.
2019 or
no.
2025.
Wait,
but
hold on
2047.
A second. That's in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We better make a movie.
Yeah, we better shoot this and cut it as soon as possible.
And we can't talk Cinema Obscura without bringing in the father of Cinema Obscura itself, one of our favorite recurring guests, Mr. John Davies.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Yes.
Round of applause.
Thank you so much.
Yes, John Davies. Fine gentleman.
One of our earliest guests on the show. He was episode 3.
That's right.
And he's been back. He's been back a couple times. And
day one.
We want him to be here every time, honestly.
I'll be back.
Just give us a call. Just show up, honestly.
Yeah.
Can we record a pod? Yeah, let's go. Let's just do it.
I saw John Davies in the parking lot. He wanted to do an episode. I don't know.
He was just kind of there peddling like buttons, and he's just like, hey, I'll be on your podcast.
That's what I do.
John, let's talk a little bit about, right off the bat, the fact that this TV Party 12 is going to be at a different location than previous TV parties, previous Cinema Obscuras. Used to be over at Township, moved a couple doors down over to the Logan Bar. And the reason for that is because Township has closed or is closing, indefinitely closed.
They are done, apparently. Hmm. I have no more information other than that, unfortunately. Yeah. But we're moving on to the Logan Bar and looking really good in there. Last month we had TV Party 11. It was a little bit of an emergency, and they came through with flying colors, and I can't thank them enough. Mark Vella, if you're out there, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's hard to find a space to do something like this last minute. So here at NoCo Cinema, we're really happy that the Logan Bar was able to host you guys.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. You just had to move like right next door.
Yeah, we were really lucky. It's literally 5 doors away. It's closer if you're coming off the Blue Line, which is a bonus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were just really accommodating and really nice. And the space is pretty incredible. I don't have to set up a screen. I don't have to do much but plug in the computer. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, they've got a screen set up?
They have 3-4 TVs set up that
wow.
My program goes over. Yeah.
That is really great. That is really great.
It's nice.
Well,
what are you doing on the 20th?
The 20th?
You should swing by.
I think there's this screening that I'm supposed to go to. I think it's called the TV Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 12?
12?
The 12th edition?
I like the TV Party 12. Like, these are all UFC events.
I mean,
going for the title.
Right.
Is it a problem if I haven't seen TV Party 1 through 11?
No, not at all.
Will we be lost?
12, do I have to catch up? Yeah.
Not at all. TV Party 12 is almost all brand new stuff. So
really, yeah. All fresh. Mm-hmm. I love that. And we've, I mean, looking at the event here, someone that we talked to last week, Dustin Pueller from Ready Freddy Films. Is he going to be showing Year 4000?
Yes.
Fantastic.
All right.
So if you listened to last week's episode and you're just like, man, I really want to see the Year 4000, be there December 20th over at Logan Bar for TV Party 12. Now, obviously, if we're going to be talking about people who are in the TV party, you got to talk to our guests, Thomas and Mike. You guys have a short or a full length? What are we looking
at here? Yes, we have a short. It's actually the second episode of a web show that we created called Dead is the New 30.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it started out as a short film we shot in 2015 called Dick Pic. So super relevant, you know, hard-hitting subject matter, of course.
Yeah.
Very strong documentary. No, it's actually just a comedy we made kind of about dating apps, stupidity of male culture, dating in general, and then we kind of turned it into a web show after that and reworked it and retitled it Dead is the New 30. So this is the second episode.
Second episode. Yeah. Are these? Do you have them posted online as well? Is that part
they
of your strategy?
They will all be available actually the day of TV Party 12.
Really? The entire series?
The first two episodes.
First two episodes,
yeah.
Okay.
Me and John Davies sat down, you know, talked about it for days at a time.
We worked on this
trying
for so
to figure
long.
This out. We did. It's been a tough, 48 hours, but yeah, we finally determined how we're going to do this.
Are these episodes short form, or are they like 20 minutes?
So the first one was about, what was the running time on it?
13 minutes.
Okay, cut right. down from 27.
Yeah, yeah. There were more jokes to begin with, and then we just went with less jokes.
Where do you guys air, the theatrical version or the director's cut?
Theatrical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we get the director's cut?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the jokes we cut weren't funny.
Oh.
So the director's cut is just longer and less funny. And we went with shorter and more funny.
Okay.
Which
I appreciate
ended
that.
Up altogether being sort of funny.
I was going for less funny and longer, but, you know, it turns out that shorter and funnier is
a lot of people
the
do less funny and longer.
Right.
We decided to go the other direction.
Right.
So it was either, you know, you go for the real nice, tight one, or you go for the Judd Apatow cut where it just completely falls off in the third act.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. The last 40 minutes is just about our parents for no reason.
So Thomas and Mike, you guys worked together on this. Can you tell me what your respective roles were?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we both kind of do a little bit of everything. Yep. Usually one person comes up with the idea first. Typically it's Tom that comes up with it. Tom's a good initial idea guy.
And then he kind of cuts them down.
Tom has a lot of bad ideas.
Yeah.
And Tom thinks that all of his ideas are pretty great.
That is correct.
And it's not true.
That is
but
correct.
But there's a couple of them that are usually really good.
Right.
But then he usually doesn't really know where to take it. And then just naturally I sort of kind of pepper in maybe a little bit of structure. And
he's like the
jokes.
Salt bay.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
He adds the spice to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
He brings the meal together.
Correctly.
I guess so. Yeah. And those aren't roles that we've ever discussed or decided upon. That's just kind of the way that it works.
Right. Natural working relationship that arises.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've never been a good first idea guy. I do come up with some. This last one, I came up with the initial idea.
Sure.
Episode
and then
two.
I kind of peppered in the details.
Yeah. So by the end of them, and we've been doing this since high school, working together and stuff on little sketches and stuff, and by the end of them, looking back, it's kind of hard to determine who exactly had what role. It truly is a collaborative effort by the
Absolutely,
end.
Yeah. I think sometimes I'll present an idea to Mike. We'll hash it out. We'll go over it. He'll throw in some ideas. We kind of grind down what doesn't work and, you know, try to bring things together. With this past one, the second episode we did of Dead is the New 30, like Mike was saying, he initially came up with the idea. And we just hash out the jokes, see what jokes work, try to take some out. I throw in some ideas. If they work, you know, if they do. And then we kind of blend it all together. And that's how we do this.
Thinking of stuff.
Thinking of
so
stuff.
So assuming
exactly.
that you guys are the kind of creative force behind all of these episodes, what? How long have you guys been working on this?
So the first short we shot, Dick Pic, we ran a Kickstarter for a month, and we successfully funded it, which was very surprising.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
We just blasted all over the place. Yep. We didn't know how to do it, you know? We just threw it out there, and we were like, what should we put as the minimum, you know?
Right.
Because, like, should
so
we shoot?
So we raised $4 million. It's actually quite impressive.
a handful of too many explosions, probably.
Right, right. Yeah, I would say so.
But money well spent. No, we raised a few grand to do it, and we spent all of it, and it was great. And we just blasted it out, and we just found a lot more support than, like, I don't know if I was absolutely stunned, but I think I was maybe surprised.
Right.
You know, like, your friends' parents and stuff like that, just, you know, giving you money for a little idea that you have and everything. And I don't know if we'd be able to do it again. I think, you know, if we were doing this every 6 months, you know, people would probably stop giving us money to do it.
Of course.
But I think there was a certain charm to it that we hadn't done anything like that in a while.
Absolutely.
And, you know, all the money adds up, and it did.
And a good method to doing the Kickstarter thing, I think, in general, is making people that are donating feel involved while you're presenting the Kickstarter itself.
Sure.
When we first launched it, we had a promo video, and we found that people really like that. So halfway through the Kickstarter, we cut another promo video, put that out there, mentioned to everyone that had donated, and then, you know, more people wanted to get involved at that point, and it helped push it forward.
Well, I really like that about Kickstarter, is that it's not just a platform to raise funds to make something, whether it be a film or an album or whatever, but it does give you the opportunity to make people feel super involved. And I'm glad that that worked out. Like, was it just people within your own social circle? Did you see donations coming from, like, so, like, surprising places?
There were a few random, like, $5 donations from people that we don't know who they are.
Probably
and
people
that was excellent.
Probably people that just Googled dick pic and stumbled upon it and thought, I'll throw some money at this.
We definitely, when we had, like, the dick pic Facebook page going on, there was definitely a lot of friend requests from strange European people.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly certain that they thought they were getting involved with something other than a goofy comedy.
A tiered incentive structure for dick pic. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'll throw $5.
They've monetized it.
They're like, usually it's just a little blurb on your phone. This thing's 13 minutes. Like, this is phenomenal. Here's $5. I look forward to it.
Oh, man.
Well, so money raising aside, when it came to the actual shooting, how did you get the folks together?
It was extremely DIY. I directed, edited it, did the coloring, the effects on it. Mike, obviously one of the main writers, I would consider him, you know, assistant director as well. Our good friend Danielle Duncan, who is a extremely talented photographer here in Chicago, was our director of photography. So she's very nice for working with us, I must say, because, you know, when I presented her with the idea, I was like, well, it's called Dick Pic.
It was like, a noticeable win.
Okay.
I'm in.
So it's called Dick Pic. But she came through and helped us out and shot with us for an entire week. And, you know, she's very good at translating our ideas, especially when I'll bring a shot sheet to her and break everything down. You know, she can kind of see what we're going for and mold it into what we want it to become.
Yeah, Danielle's fantastic because she is primarily a still photographer, and she makes a living doing that, and she doesn't do a lot of video, and she does serious political photography and stuff.
Yeah.
So for her, this was like quite a hoot to like get together with a couple of dopes with a 13-minute dick joke and help us film it. But she's very talented. Her equipment is top of the line, so that's so... With being friends with her, we have the added bonus of not just using her skill set, but also her equipment. So it just made sense to do it. And she's great from the still photography of just setting up a frame and making it look good, you know, and mise-en-scene, if you will, and moving things around in the background. Because Tom and I are writing, directing, and performing in it, so it's because we're so modest. So it's hard to have, you know, to keep an eye on everything and wear all those hats. But when you don't trust anyone else to do it, that's what you got to do.
The whole thing was a mess, really.
Yeah.
It's lucky we have anything. No, it was very smooth. We shot it over, what, 5 days?
6 days.
6 days? Okay.
We stretched it out. We didn't have longer than like a 4 or 5 hour day. So it wasn't really like a grueling 6 day shoot.
It was all it was all shot primarily in Logan Square. We shot a scene at a bar in Logan Square, the Double. Henry, the owner, let us just use the bar, open up early. We brought people in, bought people some beer and pizza, and just shot there. It was great. So it's definitely, you know, who you know and who also knows you.
And see, something like that, you couldn't do that in L.A. You would need the permit. You would need to clear up all the red tape months in advance. And
for
you just,
sure.
What's his name?
Henry.
Henry.
Yeah.
You just met this guy, I assume, and, or maybe you knew him.
Yeah, knew him for a couple of years. Awesome guy. And just like, hey, can we use the bar? Sure. When do you want to open it? You know, bring people in, buy them a bunch of rounds of beer, and make them sit there for a while.
It is amazing to me every time we have Chicago filmmakers on us, but particularly, you know, like indie filmmakers and everything. It's just the sense of community and how like willing the community in Chicago is to, you know, facilitate people to make film. It's amazing every time.
Yeah, use your resources, you know.
So where in Chicago do you guys specifically operate? Like, are you guys in Logan Square, or what neighborhoods are you usually operating?
In and around Logan, exactly. I used to live in Logan with John, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
For a number of years.
Directly across the street from Township.
We used to poop in the same place.
We did. Separately.
Yeah. Sometimes we do, just for take a walk down memory lane, for old times, you know, catch up.
When shooting in the city, I know that there's a I've seen a lot of films that are set in a specific city, like Chicago, sometimes New York, if you're really like, I want the city to be a character in the movie, which I think is one of the most contrived things anybody can say. But I get the point. Did you want people to know this is in Chicago, or were you trying to make it kind of any city, you know, in the States?
Slightly. We had that neighborhood-y kind of feel to
it.
We wanted to, you know, kind of portray that in some way, classic Chicago three flat house, but not necessarily. We didn't want it to definitely be known that it's in Chicago.
How does being in Chicago and being, are you guys from Chicago originally?
Yes.
Yeah, we're both from the West Burbs. We went to middle school and high school together and stuff.
How does that being the DNA of being in Chicago seep into what you're making?
It's grimy, you know. You have the winter months where, you know, everything dies and the city completely changes, and you have that rebirth in the spring every year where everybody's going out, you know. So there's a lot of character to this city, I think. There's a diverse amount of culture. You can find anything you want any night of the week. And I think that needs to be portrayed, especially, you know, with independent film here. You know, there's a lot of different sides to the city you can show.
I really like that.
Good answer, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's a big gold star for Tom. Nothing for Mike yet. No.
Oh, come on. It was getting warmed up.
He poops with John Davies.
He does.
Yeah, did we forget that already?
That's the brown star. When it comes to bigger films shooting in Chicago or portraying Chicago, have you guys ever watched like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD?
Ish.
Chicago Med.
I did watch the first season of Easy.
I feel like that's a really interesting project. How do you feel that these larger projects are portraying the city? Is it accurate, or do you feel like they're missing something?
Visually, it is. I think so. I think they're just looking for, you know, certain locations that they think this is Chicago. You know,
right?
They look, and they do that with every city, of course. I don't know that it has the heart of the city necessarily, but I can't really comment on it. Easy definitely had a bit of it, for sure. I think they're trying to branch out and focus on, you know.
You can't help but
spots.
Notice things that they get wrong, too,
right.
Like with Shameless, you know, like there'll be episodes where, like, Fiona just, like, she's like, I'm just going to work at this nightclub for a weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, where's this nightclub that you just
walked
made bank
into.
At for a weekend? And then, like, on her
easy.
Way home, she's, like, walking past Buckingham Fountain at midnight. And you're like, where was that nightclub?
Right. Yeah.
That on your way home to the south side, you're passing by Buckingham Fountain. And if you're walking to the south side, it's going to take you, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know, like, where are you even walking to? But, you know, that's stuff that probably 95% of that audience who watches that is not going to think that, or get upset. Yeah, it's not that you get upset about it. I mean, you know, it's a
show.
You're
just like, whatever.
But there's a lot of stuff like that on their show, yeah, because you can't help but watching Shameless specifically kind of looking around in the background like, oh, I've been there, or that's the stop I used to use for work, you know, or something like that. And, you know, the thing that they're looking at when they cut to, like, you know, their POV shot, you can tell it's like a different neighborhood or something like that. But I think it's awesome that stuff's filmed in Chicago, and like all the Chicago stuff, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD. They're not shows that I watch, but a lot of people I went to film school with and stuff that, you know, are gaffers and, you know, people like that all work on those shows.
Yeah. They're bringing a lot of work to the city.
Yeah.
A lot.
So I think it's kick ass.
One thing I want to say is I think fall here in Chicago specifically is just awesome. It's super old, vampy city, like the architecture. I think there can be a lot done with that as far as atmosphere in film that hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, there's a lot of production value in Chicago seasons.
Yeah.
And, and for every, I also feel like for every show or movie that does show Chicago in a good light and captures the heart of the city, there's like a cheap impersonation almost.
Oh, definitely.
You know? Like, I think that the one thing that struck me was there was an episode of Stranger Things where the 11 girl goes to Chicago and she meets this gang of criminals and they just start running heists all over the city or whatever. And there's just this one establishing shot when she's on her way into the city. And it's just, in my mind, I was just imagining the Duffer Brothers being like, okay, what do we need in Chicago? We need the skyline, we need the CTA, and we need a bunch of bums rummaging for trash.
Yeah.
Like, and so
that's
that was Chicago. And then it was like, okay, now you can just basically entirely forget that you're in Chicago because we did that one shot.
Yeah, and even inside of that, the establishing shot with the skyline, actually, from where you're seeing the skyline, would place you, like, she's in, like, a physical location, like it's land, but where the skyline was shot from would place you in the middle of Lake Michigan.
Right.
Like, it would place you in the water. They're like, there's nothing there. It's just water.
It doesn't matter.
I do like that it's just kind of like, well, you know, you kind of have to have these signifiers to be like, yeah, we're in Chicago, and some things are just going to look better. But then you get people from Chicago who are just like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. That doesn't actually work that way.
You can just use the intro to Perfect Strangers and everything.
Yeah, bingo.
Every establishing shot should just be the beginning of Perfect Strangers with the theme song.
I want to jump into the plot of Dick Pick here and then further.
of course.
Can you say that again,
That is a fantastic sentence.
I want to jump into the plot of Dick Pick.
All right,
and then
we all do.
We got
and by extension, Dead is a New 30.
Yeah.
You're tackling toxic masculinity, and like you didn't go out to write this necessarily, but you, as something brutish, something like, you know, very serious, but as more of a comical look at the way men believe they're supposed to operate. Would
Absolutely.
That be a good way to put it?
Definitely, I would say so. It's kind of both aspects of it. One of the characters is just a complete idiot trying to convince the other character to send a dick pic directly off the bat after meeting a girl. And they sort of go into this dialogue about, you know, why you should, why you shouldn't, in certain terms. Mike, I don't know if you want to speak on this.
if I want to speak on this. Well, you always should.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
We call it dick pic because it's a catchy title and in sort of a tongue-in-cheek sort of way. It's more so, about the technology age that we're in and the idea of doing everything through your phone, meeting people through your phone, and just, like, how strange that can be.
Right,
sort of
exactly,
thing.
Exactly.
It's more so what it's about, you know.
And it's really kind of about how, dating culture, it's just instant gratification, you know. And so one of the characters is trying to convince the other character to initially send a dick pic. They go back and forth on why you should, why you shouldn't. Then they decide to drink a Romanian moonshine, which sends everything on a downward spiral through like paranoia and, you know.
At the end, it's kind of like, were they hallucinating that the entire time? Did any of that actually happen?
Right.
Which is a great cop-out as a writer.
Of course. How are we going to end this?
Because especially with comedy, you can just get pretty silly if you're not even committing to any of this actually happening. So.
Right. And we wanted to show that, you know, these guys getting caught up in this situation on what they think they're – or what one of them thought they were supposed to do can kind of delve down this nasty path of paranoia and destruction. So it's slightly comedy, slightly horror, very much dark comedy. But
yeah.
Sounds like a commentary on my own experience with online dating.
Yeah, I think it's pretty relatable.
Did any of that actually happen? Or like, was I actually talking to a person? I don't know. No idea.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I do want to say there are plenty of immature dick jokes in the movie.
Naturally.
Yes,
you know.
It's important to put forth as a caveat.
Right, exactly.
Well, because it is on some level an immature top, like it's an immature thing, because it's like dick pics. Mm-hmm. We think of this as kind of a silly sort of product of internet culture and as you said, phone culture, dating culture in this time. But I really like that there's this idea of using the comedy of it to talk about something a little bit more mature of, oh my God, what have I done? What are the implications of doing something so flippantly that I think it's really brilliant. I really think that's
thank you. And I think that what's been fun too is, and part of the reason we titled it Dick Pic and everything is it's fun to lead people into the experience with maybe false pretenses, you know, and they think that it's very like broed out and maybe more celebrating dick pics and stuff like that, whereas it's sort of the opposite. And a lot of reaction we have afterwards is people saying that they didn't expect it to hit them that way, or they didn't expect it to be like not even that smart, but smart at all, you know, or anything like that. And it's fun to get those reactions out of people. And perhaps we did ourselves a disservice, you know what I mean, by giving people the wrong impression up front. But that's just kind of the way we operate.
That was definitely the part of it, to make people think it's possibly going to be something else going into it. And it even does start out that way with a bunch of, you know, ridiculous dick jokes. And the broed out character, as he was saying, is extremely broed out and over the top, you know. Send her a picture of your dick. Why wouldn't you do this?
Yeah.
You know, trying to convince him over and over to do it. And then the ramifications of that. And we kind of wanted to show that, you know, the female character was in control the entire time, throughout the entire film. These guys spiraling out of control, not knowing what's going on if they drink this Romanian moonshine.
Yeah. Abbott and Costello meet dick pics.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think a good film that this just reminds me of is like, or this idea of talking about something deeper through raunch and kind of these more taboo topics. It reminds me a little bit of Superbad, which is at its core a movie about male relationships and, you know, kind of eschewing masculinity in favor of something more thoughtful. And that seems to be the goal of Dick Pic. Now, with Dick Pic being the short and Dead is the New 30, would you say it's an adaptation or is it a continuance of the themes?
It would be sort of a continuance of the themes in a certain way. We created Dick Pic, but then we realized we kind of wanted to roll with those two characters and just kind of throw them into different situations. And we didn't want it to be, you know, Dick Pic 1. Dick Pic 2.
The Dickening.
Yeah.
Dickening.
Still Dickens.
Return to Dick Planet.
Exactly, yeah. There's many different routes you could go. So we had the idea for a web show just called Dead is the New 30, where it's kind of these two 30-something characters just bumbling through this heightened urban reality, dealing with different situations. And they're not necessarily even the same characters each show. They could be suddenly working, you know, in a restaurant.
Right.
And the next
one might be a businessman.
Right.
In an episode,
sure.
But we still call each other Mike and Tom the whole time.
And it's semi-meta to where, you know, part of it, there is the realization that it is a sketch show. And, you know, there's episodes where we're trying to figure out how to write sketches and stuff like that. So it kind of goes back on itself.
I like that. It's fun.
It does sound so, particularly from the Dick Pic episode, it sounds like you're using a lot of, not like tropes, but a lot of, you're employing the way that black comedy approaches like difficult topics, right? By creating potentially problematic characters and then introducing the moral of the episode through that character's progression in the episode.
A lot of our stuff is definitely like that. We have a lot of comedy, but there's always a lot of dark humor, like just a tinge of horror in a lot of our stuff, too, I would say.
A lot of it starts out as horror, I guess. Dick Pic started out as a thriller.
It did.
Really?
But I think that
it's a thrilling title, so.
Right. It's usually how girls describe dick pics.
A thriller.
Did you get it? Like it was a thrill to receive that on my phone. I think that that makes complete sense, where someone may be surprised that, oh, it started out as a thriller and then became a comedy. I think that comedy and horror are, you know, like step siblings, and they have, you know, like very much to do with each other, especially with performing comedy and horror. Because from a performer approaching those situations, you're talking about a heightened reality. A lot of times your dialogue makes no sense, or, you know, in the real world, these aren't things that anyone would actually be saying in a horror movie or a comedy, and yet you're saying them with full conviction.
Sure.
You know? So I actually think there's a lot of similarities between, like, everyone was surprised when Jordan Peele came out with Get Out, you know, like, oh, he's a funny guy that came out. I was like, well, that makes complete sense that he'd make a great horror movie because he has that heightened perspective.
Yeah.
Tom and I talk about this all the time.
Get Out. I think for the first five or six episodes, Get Out was mentioned at least once every single episode.
It's a fixture. But also just the anatomy, how you've said this before, that the anatomy of a joke and the anatomy of a scare are essentially the same thing. And how, like,
there's some teasing, there's a little bit of foreplay.
It's all set up a payoff, like you
a little
set
misdirection,
the thing
up. And then a surprise.
It's all about that. Sure. There's some subversion of expectations, like,
and even the audience experience is sort of similar if you're watching a comedy or a horror movie, right? Because it just feels good to share, like, the products of a joke and the products of a scare with other people.
Very base emotions,
Yeah, exactly.
Was there any trouble? How'd you guys feel about going from making Dick Pic being a self-contained short and then moving into this idea of doing a series? Now, granted, it seems like you guys are doing a sort of anthology thing with having different characters. Maybe they might return, maybe they might not. But thinking in this kind of series mentality versus thinking in a single feature mentality, was there a change or did it feel natural?
Well, I think at first with the Dick Pic thing, we just wanted to get something done, and we just wanted to put it out there and have it done, so we didn't really think too much past that, just calling it Dick Pic. And then, you know, of course, we had more ideas and everything, what would we call that? So then we kind of backtracked, and it's like, okay, the whole thing, we'll call it Dead is the New 30, and everything we do is under that umbrella.
Exactly.
So Dick Pic is sort of unofficially, say, like episode one of Dead is the New 30.
Pilot, as it were.
Yeah. And then, you know, the subsequent episodes coming up don't necessarily relate to or have to relate to that. They're kind of their own thing, but it's all Dead is the New 30. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a very linear progression by any means with the characters or the stories or the plot lines. It's just Tom and I kind of playing loose versions of ourselves in different situations.
Yeah.
And again, being vague, while sounds like a really bold artistic choice, is just a really great cop-out.
Yeah.
to be able to stay loose. And it's like, that's our artistic approach. But also it means we can be super lazy.
Whether or not you guys believe that you guys are being lazy, I mean, if Dick Pic, it sounds like you mentioned it earlier, it's sort of your commentary on toxic masculinity. Like, approaching that, tackling that topic, especially as men, that's not a lazy approach at all.
Yeah.
So could you maybe give us a teaser about this second episode? Could you give us a teaser as to, like, what kind of subject matter you're tackling?
So it's called Clit Pic.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. And what is it? Wow. What is that?
No, it's called
fruit. Are you asking what a clitoris is?
It is. So it's called Fruit and Salad Party.
Yeah, it's not as there's way less commentary on anything, I would say, with this one. This one is more pure clowny silliness.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's much shorter. It was much easier to shoot. It was a quick idea, and we were like, let's just do it. This will be simple. And basically what it is that one guy is very excited about a fruit and salad party that is going down that he's been planning for 6 or 7 months.
Oh, my God.
6 or 7.
I can lost track.
Six
or 7 months is said aloud at one point. And when he shows up to the apartment where the fruit and salad party is going down, not only is his friend who's hosting the fruit and salad party not there, but his brother, who's house-sitting for him, has not even heard that this fruit and salad party is happening. And the guy who shows up with all the fruit and salad that he bought the night before in anticipation for a huge fruit and salad party is very upset about it.
Wants to
move forward with the fruit and salad party, despite the fact that the guy he's talking to doesn't know anything about it. And that's it.
So it's a it's a cinematic adaptation of Sometimes a Great Notion by Ken Kesey.
Real silly, real fun. And again, I guess just whatever ideas come to us, it kind of fits into the looseness of Dead is the New 30.
Yeah.
that we don't need to force any social commentary in there. Or it just happens, or it doesn't. I suppose you could work something in with agriculture and globalization when it comes to fruit and salad. But, you know, just have at it yourself.
Yeah. we'll send it over to some critical theorists.
Come up with something.
There's just tons of esoteric knowledge in this one. You know, mass media, globalization, fruit and salad, parties, it's out of control.
Could one say that fruit and salad is somewhat of a signifier for the situation in the Middle East?
Well, where are you going first? You walk in
the land
to
of fruit
a fruit and salad party. On your way there, are you thinking I'm going to have equal amounts of fruit and salad? Or is there
is this a two-snack solution?
Right. Which I'm probably going to have more of the fruit. I'm just going to be honest with you.
How does your fruit and salad party relate to the political situation in the Middle East, and why is it a microcosm of the Israeli-Palestinian
conflict? Because fruit and salad have always been divided, right? Yeah. And they can't find common ground.
Right.
Yet everyone still appreciates both for what they are, and seemingly they would go together.
And they do. I mean, a Waldorf salad, you could eat that, you know?
Oh, my God.
They really do.
Sometimes you have a nice salad with some dried berries.
Right, dried cherries, some, you know, black truffle.
I have to write this down.
Arugula.
Right.
You can mix it all together, and you know, eventually, if they both don't realize they're one in the same, they're all going to.
That's the thing
and
is that the fruit thinks that it has everything going on, doesn't need the salad,
it's
and
so
then
sweet.
The salad thinks, well, get that fruit out of here.
Absolutely.
But when they join forces and got together, then suddenly you have yourself a party.
So that's just a little insight into how you guys write together, right? It's just
bouncing off one another. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I had to take a moment to write down the Waldorf salad is the two-state solution of fruit and salad. Get me Jared Kushner. I've got this.
It's so simple.
If he's not in prison,
wouldn't that
yet.
Be disappointing if you showed up to a fruit and salad party and it was just Waldorfs and you're like, isn't that just salad?
It's a big
like, well, there is some fruit in there.
Why even put the and in there? There's no qualifier.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be a separate fruit salad party.
All right, so this fruit salad party episode is going to premiere at the Logan Bar Cinema Obscura on December 20th, part of TV Party 12. Real quick, did you guys already know John? How'd you get to meet each other?
I've known John since I was probably like 12.
Been like
something.
50 years.
50 years.
It's been a while.
You guys look great.
It's been a long time. We just grew up in the same area, know a lot of the same people, and our paths crossed a bunch. Mm-hmm. We were roommates for a while. And then John started the Cinema Obscura stuff, and he knew that, we always kind of dabbled in sketches and stuff like that. So reached out, and super cool. It's exciting to be a part of it, and it's a cool thing that's happening.
We are going to have a TV party tonight.
I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Oh, yeah. And you should be able to find myself and Connor there, weather permitting.
On the 20th.
I hope so.
On the 20th.
I hope so. It's got a roof. Don't worry about the weather.
That's rad.
We'll be inside.
And it's also a bar. So get on over there December 20th at Logan Bar. It's TV Party 12. Check out Cinema Obscura on Facebook for more. I mean, and you should be following that anyway, especially the Instagram.
Yeah.
Follow John Cinema Obscura on Instagram. There's always solid Dune memes.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you're into Dune, but he's got top tier Dune memes.
Dune posting renaissance all
Dune,
of a sudden.
Hellraiser, Star Wars, pretty much anything that makes me laugh, I'm going to put it up there and hopefully make y'all laugh too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty great, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the majority of my likes on Instagram go directly
are going over to
you.
Cinema Obscura. Awesome. At Cinema Obscura on Instagram. And then for Dead is the New 30, you guys are on Facebook, so you can head on over. Just search Dead is the New 30, at Dead is the New 30, if you like to do that sort of thing. Are you guys on Twitter and Instagram as well?
Yeah, it's at Dead is the New 30 on Twitter. And then there will be an Instagram eventually.
Soon. I really love this logo. Facebook.
Thank you.
I think I appreciate that. That is really funny. I really like that. So, again, catch them on December 20th. We're going to take a quick break here and just go over maybe some fun topics, talk a little bit about what we've been watching this week maybe. So stick around. We'll be right back. The back, everybody. No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And right now we're going to get into one of our favorite things to do, which is talk a little bit about what we've watched in the last week. Always something good. We ask our guests what's really been, piquing their interest. What have they seen visually or even read something, listened to something that has really inspired them or they really enjoyed this last week. So let's start over with Thomas Motier.
Yeah, definitely. I got to go with Good Time, 100%.
Yeah,
the movie
I have not
with
seen
Robert
that.
Pattinson. And it's pretty incredible. I think they're the Safdie brothers.
Yeah, the Safdie brothers.
Safdie brothers. Okay, yeah. They are just extremely talented. They did a movie in 2014. I think Heaven Knows What is what it's called. But Good Time is just an extremely gritty, visually intense film. It's awesome.
Do you think we're looking at awards for that one?
Possibly. I just think that they always capture this like gritty subject matter, but the visuals they use to capture that are always just awesome as far as like the color work, the storytelling, just the locations they use, the lighting, the way it's shot, everything they do is just awesome. But Good Time is just excellent.
Were you wary about Robert Pattinson going
definitely,
into it?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he just seems so strung out and just out of his mind in that movie. It's pretty great. Totally believable. Yeah.
And that's I know that that's available on, like, digital platforms. You can get the DVD, Blu-ray now. So no excuse. And it comes from A24, which is a...
They're killing it.
They're literally killing it.
Yeah. Insane how much great stuff they're putting out. All right, let's go over to Mike Rempert. What have you watched, listened to, read?
Let's see. Cruised through all of Horace and Pete last week.
Yeah?
Did you guys catch that?
I haven't seen it yet.
I know that's Louis C.K., correct?
Yeah.
And who else? Steve Buscemi, right?
Yeah, Buscemi's in there. Yeah. Alan Alda.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Is phenomenal in it.
Now, did everything that has been going on with Louis C.K. affect the way that you watched it?
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
How did it make you feel?
It sucks. You know, because it's super unfortunate, and what he did is terrible. It's that weird thing, because I'm a huge Woody Allen fan, too, you know?
Right.
And it's that weird thing of, like, can you still appreciate the person's work kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't been able to go back and watch his comedy at all for some reason, because he just seems, like, so smug when you watch his comedy now. Like,
yeah.
Like,
Woody Allen or Louis C.K.?
Louis C.K.
Okay.
Like, knowing everything that happened. Watching him just like stand up there with a mic and like talk about himself, like it just I don't know, it just strikes me the wrong way. With Horace and Pete, it was something I had started before the news, and then never got around to finishing it. And then I was like, well, let's just watch this. I mean, he already made it,
yeah.
You know, let's just watch it. Mm-hmm.
Would you ever watch I Love You, Daddy if it ever got any sort of release?
Yeah, I mean that's the thing.
Just out of like morbid curiosity in a sense.
Oh no, like, I'm like super like selfishly. I'm like super disappointed that movie's not coming out.
Yeah.
You know, I was like looking forward to it for a while. You know, I get why it's not coming out, but then at the same time, you're kind of like, well, he already made it. You know, I mean. I wouldn't mind seeing it.
He's actually buying the distribution rights back from The Orchard, the Sony
production
company.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some people are speculating
so
he might do
out.
Like a Horace and Pete thing, you know, put it up on his website for $20 or whatever.
Interesting.
I'd be interested to see where
that would
goes.
Be the move for
sure.
Yeah,
I think he will be back. I don't think it's, a Cosby situation. I think that he will, you know, continue a career in comedy, but I think it, you know, There's no blueprint as to how to go about doing that, you know. So
yeah,
I think that'll take a lot of time, and he'll probably never have the same fan base.
Yeah, I think, and I'll say this: I think rightfully so. That if you're turned off by Louis C.K. now, like I'm kind of turned off by him now. I kind of don't really like if he comes back. He comes back, such is life. I don't know how much I'd be willing to. Engage with it, but it does. It's still, but to your point, I still really want to see what I Love You, Daddy is. I'd probably watch Horace and Pete just to know,
yeah,
because now we're watching it with a whole new lens and with a whole new frame of reference.
Well, watching that show or watching that movie, that doesn't, you know, put you in that room with like him and those women,
true,
and like you're not like a part of it. You know, like you're not like supporting any of that. You're just watching something that somebody made, mm-hmm. you know? So I can sort of compartmentalize those two different parts of someone's life, but I can see how that'd be easier said than done for some other people.
All right. Well, Horace and Pete, that's what, Mr. Mike Rempert got through, and he made it. You sprinted.
It's a tough one.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. I recommend it. There's very long monologues. There's very little structure. One episode will be 26 minutes. Next episode is 54 minutes.
Wow.
Some episodes, there was one that was 26, was just, for the most part, one long monologue from a woman, like single shot.
Wow.
And there's a couple moments like that in the show that are 10-minute long monologues and stuff. And looking back, it's not, you're like, I don't know if it was great. It was amazing, but I definitely, like, watched it and, like, wanted to see the next episode every single time, you know? And it was certainly, like, an experiment. So
yeah.
Good for him.
All right. Mr. John Davies.
Hey, ho.
What would you recommend? What have you watched or what have you read, listened to?
I don't read or listen to anything. I just watch stuff. That's all I do.
Even better.
I can't do either or the other.
Doing both at once.
I did just finish the new, I don't know how new it is, but there's a new series on Netflix called Dark. It's German.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this.
Pretty good.
Excellent.
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty solid.
What's the premise?
Oh, I don't want to say anything without giving it away, but kind of cross Lost and Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Does it have that
the good
childlike
stuff from those two things?
Oh, okay. Season two of Stranger Things.
Don't get me started on that.
I haven't seen any of season two yet.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same.
I've heard a lot of comparisons with Dark, with like directorial influences being like David Lynch and David Fincher as well.
Yeah, I see that. Absolutely. Yeah. And the sound design, the music is incredible. Man. There's some things where it's just a dude picking a coffee can off the ground and there's this crazy ass music and you're like, what is going on? It's so weird.
Those Germans.
I love it. Yeah.
I've heard that the English dubbing is very poor and that it's recommended to watch it in German with the English subs.
I watched it with the subs. Yeah, 100%.
But I bet that's right. Yeah, I watched it in English. I did not hear that.
Everyone said the English dubbing is like very, very bad and distracting is what I've heard.
Huh. All right. Well, watch it both ways. I am a fan of subtitles, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a weird thing. It took me a while to come around to it, but like as I'll say in my recommendation, I've definitely come around to really enjoying subtitles because then you get to hear the performance and still understand it. But there's some things where I'm just like, I'm gonna throw on the dub here.
Some things you have to.
I want to kind of throw myself just real quick.
Yeah,
throw myself
it.
Under the bus with this. So I was watching it. I was watching it on recommendation because somebody told me it's like, oh yeah, it's like David Lynch, it's like David Fincher, but it's like a miniseries. So check it out. So I was watching the first episode of Dark, and I was watching it with the English dub, and I was watching it, and when the mouth wasn't like matching up, I was like, wow. So I wonder if like in another episode they're gonna be like they have that audio and they're like, because it's like a time. There's like a bunch of different time periods, right? Yeah. And I was like, wow, are they just going to be like, they took the audio from this scene and they're going to use it in a later episode, and this is like from a future episode.
So
it's
Lynchian.
Like, it was going to be like a Radiohead album, but it's a miniseries.
Honestly, I think if you're trying to read and watch this one and put the story together in your head without the English, it's going to be so hard. I was really confused until about the fifth episode.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it in English and watching it in English, and I was just like, what the hell is going on? It was so crazy. But to add the, like, having to read and put it all together, I don't know if I could do. I'm going to give it a shot with season two.
It's super dense,
man, it was so hard. Like, it took me a while to figure out what the story was.
Really?
It took, seriously, like five episodes. And I was listening to it in English. And it is
very much like in my opinion, a more mature, dark version of Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of, you know, I don't want to ruin anything.
No.
I'm interested.
I like how you think that both of you with this show, it's like saying anything about it will ruin anything. Like there's just like two things that are discussed.
Yeah.
Can't mention either one of them.
Right.
Well, you see, there's this thing that happens.
It plays with space and time, fourth dimension, like the idea of like, you know, time being a flat circle and everything existing at once.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
Let's go back to not trying to ruin anything.
It plays with that. Well. It might not be about that. It plays with it.
All right. Personally, I've got a recommendation. I finally, through the Barnes & Noble sale, I love Criterion Collection movies because I'm just a beast. I just love them. I love the look. They're like adult Pokemon cards to me. I'm just like, I need to, just want to have them. Like, they just look beautiful. But I purchased earlier last month during the sale, I got finally got Seven Samurai. And I'd never seen it. And I'd seen some other Akira Kurosawa. And I was just like, well, it's fucking Seven Samurai. Like, people list this as, like, one of the greatest movies to ever be made, ever. I have to watch it. And I was a little bit like, oh, man, this movie is 3.5 hours long different language.
Stick with it, definitely.
Yeah. And I finally sat down and watched it in its entirety. And I was blown away because... One, I was just like, wow, I'm really able to do the subtitles here. And two, like, the length felt like once you allow yourself to be like, I'm going to watch something that is going to take its time and really flesh out this relatively simple plot into being something so much more, like, it felt like it was over in an instant. And funny enough, with the Criterion Edition, they keep the intermission in. Like, it literally plays its whole 10-minute intermission, which was really fun because I can get up and get myself a glass of water and then come back.
You could also just pause any show.
Yeah. But I gave myself the experience.
Yeah, use it for its true purpose.
Yeah. Use it for its true purpose.
Trying to knock out phone calls during the intermission.
Exactly.
Like, I got to go, intermission.
They're coming
over.
Back. Wait, aren't you watching this at home on a DVD player? Like,
trying to get just full experience.
Fucking pause
it's
it.
A Criterion Collection.
At the end of the day, like, just watching it and realizing that later, you know, filmmakers would use every bit and piece from this story, not just the plot itself, which is remade into The Magnificent Seven and then, in a looser sense, A Bug's Life by Pixar. What? It's, you know, even just the small technical things like the screen wipes. It's total Star Wars. Like, I'm just like, oh, man, this is exactly where George Lucas got this. The screen wipes between scenes.
Entirely.
And this, that, and the next thing. And it was just it was really great to see where all this influence came from. So if you want to give yourself a 3.5 hour education in the new Hollywood movement of the late 60s, early 70s, check out Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa. Over to Connor. Cap us off here, bud.
All right. So what began as a somewhat sober choice to watch Mortal Kombat, the movie, yes, turned into a self-imposed homework assignment of watching as many video game adaptation films as I could.
Nice. Fantastic.
Nice.
And I think most people would agree that Hollywood and whatever has summarily failed at adapting, like, good video game properties.
Silent Hill is pretty good.
Silent Hill is pretty good.
What about Blood Rain? Does anybody remember Blood Rain?
Anybody?
Did they really? Did they?
Oh, they did two of them.
Oh, gosh.
So I've got to say, even though they are totally panned critically, I think that the best video game adaptation movies are the first two Pokemon films. And you guys can fight me on it if you want to. But
does it count as a video game adaptation? Or is it,
because Pokemon's Pokemon, and then they made a video game based on Pokemon, right? It didn't start as a video game.
Well, that's the thing. I think it might have started as a video game.
I think it did.
And then they made...
Oh. Yeah, it was kind of an all-encompassing monster.
They were just
took
like,
over Japan.
Yeah, because the story of the television series is not the same as what's happening. In the game is super generic. Your name is not Ash. It's Red.
Right.
Or Blue.
First off, Pikachu's character in the first film is just... No, I don't know.
So unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, honestly, though,
I have seen the first Pokemon film.
The first one? Yes. Mewtwo Strikes Back.
Yeah. Okay.
So, come on. So there's the beginning where it opens up and he's like... Mewtwo is struggling with his identity, doesn't know who he is.
Right.
He's next. He's like psychically linked to all these clones, and then they just die in front of him. And there's this girl. The scientist is like obsessed with the cloning process because he wants to bring his little girl back to life. And she dies next to Mewtwo, and so this guy goes crazy and he like pours all of his ambition into bringing Mewtwo to life. And then Mewtwo realizes that he's just being used as a pawn in these people's game, and that turns into a disdain for humanity. And then he challenges all of humanity to this like game of his own design, and if they lose, he's going to literally destroy the planet with his storms, right. Like with, by creating storms.
It's just shocking. This is shockingly
this Pokemon.
Yeah.
No, it's just crazy. Mewtwo strikes. Well, it's
that is crazy.
It's awesome. It's like it's a really good. I think there's like a really good moral in there that was just horribly executed in particularly the English adaptation.
Culture shock.
Yeah. It's like if you can look at Pokemon as a natural force or like an embodiment of the natural world, and like. Human ambition and human greed bastardizing this like naturally occurring power, trying to turn it to its own ends, ultimately ending up in its destruction. I mean, it's a classic tale. Absolutely. And it's a great thing to introduce to kids. It's a great moral to, like, you know, have compassion for like nature and everything.
Yeah.
Lest you be destroyed by it. And also, it's just a great thing to take you back to the source material. It develops the world building, you know. I was impassioned when I was watching it, and this. Keep in mind, this movie has a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right,
like, sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when I watched it when I was 7, 8 years old, when that came out, I was floored. My whole family went, like, we were, so, like, I remember my parents, like my dad, who couldn't give a shit about any of it. He was there watching. He watched the entire thing, and I think he might have enjoyed it. Like, he might have had a good time with it. It's a. You know what? You've made a solid case. I'm going to have to rewatch it now. Mm-hmm. Is it on Blu-ray? Did they update it for HD?
When does the Criterion Pokemon come out?
With the 10-minute
intermission.
You just
want to have it. It looks so good.
I also don't want to like belabor it too long, but there were so many things wrong with that movie. Like, in terms of just the laziness of the dubbing. There's this guy. So that one of the trainers has a Pidgeot, and he calls it a Pidgeotto. Like, come
unreal.
On. Pikachu kills a golem.
Yeah,
they
were just trying to push it out. Like, whatever. Skip that part.
I'm furious. Yeah. I was furious and impassioned while watching this movie. So I'll leave it there because I could go out.
Yeah. Well, go on. Incredible. Go out and rent the first two Pokemon movies. And you've heard all these great recommendations. Mm-hmm. So go out and watch all of them. Give yourself a little bit of an education here. So we've got Good Time, Horace and Pete, Dark, the new series on Netflix, Seven Samurai, and then the first two Pokemon.
Yes. The first one. The second one's not.
All right, first Pokemon movie.
Could I give an honorable mention as well?
Yes,
real quickly?
Please.
I also read Norm MacDonald's fake memoir.
Been fascinated.
Which is what
by
I should have mentioned. And it's unbelievable. It's a bunch of fake stories mixed in with real stories. You don't really know what's fake or real. Some stuff is like obviously fake. He talks about him and Lorne Michaels shooting morphine together and stuff like that. Is
my favorite.
Completely made up. But if you like Norm MacDonald, it's fantastic. And you'll find yourself, like, with many of his jokes a few pages in, and you're like, all right, Norm, why am I still reading it? And then he hits you with just with one line that makes you look like a crazy person on the train because you can't stop laughing.
Exactly.
So,
he's
honorable mention.
He's the master of the long game. Like, I've heard his
so
moth
good.
Joke.
Oh,
the
yeah.
moth joke... I had me in tears.
It's in the book. It's longer in
Is
the
it?
Book.
Oh, mm.
And he does this whole thing in the book where he's talking about... Rodney Dangerfield, and all the stories he has about Rodney Dangerfield are just Rodney Dangerfield jokes. Like, he's like Rodney once told me a story that he went to the doctor and the doctor told him he was sick, so he said he wanted a second opinion, and get this, the doctor tells him, well, you're ugly too. I mean, can you believe that? A doctor said that to this guy. He just doesn't get any respect. You know, like, it's like pages of just stories of Dangerfield as Dangerfield jokes.
Oh, my
God. He's just like eating up time in this book.
It's amazing.
So.
What is it called?
Fantastic. It's called Based on a True Story, Not a Memoir.
Okay.
Yeah.
By Norm MacDonald.
I'll have to check that out. I've heard a lot about it, and that it was like this idea of fake things mixed in with real things to completely confuse you, which is kind of like Norm MacDonald's whole thing.
Yeah.
He's about confusing you.
As a reader of the book, he loses you and wins you back over and over again. You know, but you got to let yourself get lost for a bit.
Absolutely.
You know, and then he will get you back, though. It's worth it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for these fantastic recommendations. Go out and watch them. And thank you overall for being here, guys. We've got Thomas Motier, Mike Rempert, John Davies. You can check out the debut of Episode 2 of Dead is the New 30 over at Logan Bar on December 20th, part of TV Party 12.
TV Party 12.
Which is, in turn, part of Cinema Obscura.
Cinema Obscura.
Follow all these guys on social media because you need to know what's going on in this city. Go have some fun. Forget the multiplex. Watch something that comes from the heart. Dick pics. Right from there. All right. This is NoCo Cinema on WGN+. I'm Tom Hutch.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you guys next week.